Hi. Thank you for joining us at UInc. My name is Rhea Greif, and I'm here with you today, as I am every week, to help build the most important brand in your life, which is you. When we talk about building, we use tools, and the same goes for building our brand. These wellness tools will help elevate your emotional intelligence and help to lead you in a more positive, successful direction in life and in business. Some of these tools will help with customizations needed today, and some you will keep in the credenza for a future vendetta. This week's tool is culture, and why it is important to honor culture and incorporate it with your coworkers and your co-lifers once I've demonstrated to you that this is a great tool for your brand.
If you don't know the culture, here's the whole structure.
We had enough of the lackluster.
Trust us, we get the kind of games you can't win in Blockbuster.
Game related, raise it bit by bit. Yo, D, link up the cable, we'll go hit for hit. Phantasma, plasma, particle beam needs a...
We all have cultures in our lives. Whether it is that bacterial culture growing on the pizza under the bed of your messy teenager, to the magnificent languages passed down from immigrant parents. Yes, even language shapes who we are. According to the linguistic relativity principle, the way in which we think about the world is directly influenced by the language we use to talk about it. Therefore, to speak another language is to assume a culture, and to know a culture is like knowing a language. Language and culture are homologous mental realities, and mental realities and therefore culture also occur with food. But I am not talking about pho or gyros. In this case, what we choose to eat as a lifestyle dictates culture. The book, The Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan, explores the conversation about vegetarianism versus meat eating and everything else in between, such as pegan, vegan, paleo, and how embattled and embittered people become based on their cultural beliefs when it comes to their food. This book tries to restore the balance in opposing views via exploring the perfect solution for all. Abandon all factory farms, support your local farmer, and eat a 75% plant-based diet, which every nutritionist on this planet can actually agree on, culturally or otherwise. So we see that culture is a strong part of people's identities. It influences their views, their values, their humor, their hopes, their loyalties, and their worries and fears, their perceptions, and even their personalities. Having spent years abroad in Europe, I can tell you that Americans can be spotted a mile away. We are boisterous, terribly energetic, and typically laden with things. So when you are working with people and building relationships with them, it helps to have some perspective and understanding their cultures so we don't make ignorant judgments of others, like Americans are attention-starved, self-centered, rude, and materialistic, whereas in cultural reality, we are optimists, hard workers, carefree, and we like to be prepared. And we are most often with those of very different cultures than us at work. The average American spends the majority of their waking life at work, and we are increasingly spending it with those that are dramatically different than us due to globalism. Which is no wonder why books about corporate culture abound. How does culture affect business? During business communication with people from a different culture, their beliefs and manners have to be taken into account. Language barriers need to be overcome. Cultural differences impact the success or failure of business negotiations. The differences in the sensitivity to time, way of communication, decision-making, risk-taking, and thinking of the parties involved need to be considered. And in the book, The Culture Code, author Daniel Coyle goes inside some of the world's most successful organizations, including U.S. Navy SEALs, Zappos, the Upright Citizens Brigade, the San Antonio Spurs, even a gang of jewel thieves, and reveals their culture-building processes and explains how diverse groups learn to function with a single mind. And you can find the links to all of these scholarly books, as well as all their peer-reviewed articles we discuss on UInc on WCBE.org, as well as our full podcasts and our episodes on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook as UInc Radio, or just visit us at tworogues.com. That's the number two, thewordrogues.com. Have a tool you wield especially well or know someone that does to be a guest on our show? Drop us a line. Have a question about emotional intelligence for me? Leave us a message. And you can also find us at our studios, NPR Member Station 90.5 FM, and UINC is also now on PRX, Public Radio Exchange. Now, before I settle into my ava latte and introducing our next guest, some final thoughts come from the book Intentional Parenting by Yvonne Gray in terms of enriching our lives with experiences and art and language and food and diversity at work and play. She reminds us to continue to be curious and explore the world with our children. Follow kids' insatiable need to explore and how curiosity is a great thing to have as a learner. Parents ought to retain childlike spontaneity, creativity, exploration, and the ability to live life with a sense of wonder. Becoming learning partners in navigating our world and discover this amazing planet and all the cultures that reside upon it. Hence, our cultural values and beliefs influence how we approach living and manifest themselves through our lifestyle. The importance of culture lies in the close association with the ways of thinking and living of sophistication. Culture is the sum of all the forms of art, of love, and of thought, which in the course of centuries have enabled man to be less enslaved. And that is the quote by André Malraux, a French novelist, art historian, and statesman, an active supporter of Charles de Gaulle, president of France, and he served for 10 years as France's Minister of Cultural Affairs.
You culture killed my dog.
Today's guest was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, the son of Italian immigrant parents. From humble beginnings, he became a cum laude graduate of the prestigious Pratt Institute School of Architecture in New York City and has lived and traveled extensively abroad. Today, Michael Buongiorno is a noted design leader with a focus on community-impacting, mission-driven architecture that supports and enhances the fabric of the city and furthers a fundamental belief that great design is the essential building block to vibrant, healthy communities. His work has garnered numerous awards nationally, most recently named the Wall Street Journal's Best Architecture of 2015 for the design of Columbus Museum of Art's Margaret M. Walter Wing. No doubt influenced by the rich culture of Brooklyn in the 70s and rooted in thousands of years of Italian architecture sensibility. Michael has presented and written extensively on design and creative placemaking, and Michael's 2012 TEDx Columbus talk entitled Looking Over the Overlooked took the audience on a journey to discover new ways to reimagine cities. When not doing TED Talks or designing award-winning museums, Mr. Buongiorno can be found escorting his daughters to Buckeye games or pumpkin patches or perhaps even dancing to his favorite DJs. Welcome, Mr. Buongiorno.
Great to be here, Ria.
Okay, so I don't say this very often, but I was wrong. Your dad really did take your guys' van to Europe when you were a kid and did the cross-country trip. And now I'm thinking I want to do this. But can you tell our listeners about this trip so that they can get a little bit acclimated with your savoir-faire?
Wow, how far do you want me to go into it?
We have plenty of time.
Well, so my dad is originally from Sicily. He came here in the 60s, and it was important to him. There were two things that he wanted to spend money on, and that was education and travel. And so we would take trips, and generally they were unconventional because we didn't have much money, so we had to stretch the dollar as far as possible. One of the trips involved him doing the calculus on how much it would cost for us to go and spend time in Europe, Northern Europe and Italy. And he looked at hotel costs and all that. And he said, you know, there's got to be a different solution. We had this large Dodge Ram van. And he said, I can ship that to Rotterdam from Newark, New Jersey, and we can live in the van. And that's going to be a lot cheaper then. So you guys will get a European vacation, but you're going to have to do it on different terms.
Right, because there's five of you.
There are five of us. Yes. So on this particular trip, there were three Buongiorno boys, okay, and then a guest.
Okay.
So the guest had to be subjected to this alternate reality. So we shipped the van to Rotterdam, and go to pick it up and the battery was dead. And so that started our adventures. In the van was packed, because it was a hidden compartment, was food, toiletries, extra clothing, utensils, all kinds of things that you would need on a road trip. All stowed away. This is pre 9/11 and all that. So obviously there's a little more latitude there.
Yeah.
So we begin this journey through Europe in this van, and literally we were living in the van, occasionally down by a river.
Yeah. Farley, Chris Farley.
Yes. Nice. Occasionally, you know, near a fountain or something like that. And it had New York plates on it, and it was a four-cylinder van, not much power, not diesel.
Wow.
You know, regular gasoline. And so we used this to kind of bounce around all these northern European towns, eventually making our way down toward Italy.
So what do you think these experiences have affected you in terms of, do you think today's culture would treat these experiences differently, would look at them differently? Because back then it was just like this magical kid environment. Mm-hmm. So today's culture is all about safety and normalization and standardization. So I was like, in retrospect, how has the world treated your dad in these experiences?
I think the context was completely different. I mean, I would say culturally, like, I think it's dependent on like who's having the experiences. So I could imagine that children of recent immigrants are having similar experiences that we don't know about, right?
That's correct.
But a lot of our kids are growing up within the context of, you know, we're second generation.
That's true.
And it has become more normalized and prescriptive to the point where they look at things as weird. The children, you know, we didn't have a choice, right?
That's true.
We kind of had to go along with it. So it was all we knew. So it wasn't until later that I realized how bizarre my childhood was, but it was fun. But I think it was there was a greater acceptance of risk because there was nothing to lose. You know, my dad came here with nothing, and so there was, I mean, he could go back to having nothing and probably be comfortable with it. And so there was not a whole lot to lose. Mm-hmm. All he had to do was provide for his kids. He was going to do it no matter what the situation. So he was going to figure out a way. And that's the beauty of immigrants, is that they figure out ways to operate that are alternate realities or economies. I mean, he had a whole different economy based on barter and trade.
Because they have to.
They had to. It was a necessity thing. And so I think that kind of like DIY mentality just passes itself down.
True.
And you get influenced by it. But at the same time, completely understanding that you're probably not going to do the same things with your kids because, you know, their context is completely different.
Right. And I like what you said about like that's the culturally they're different because they have to take risk and also because they have nothing else to lose. That's a great point. Okay, so Italy's architecture almost spans 3,000 years and has been renowned for differences in style from Etruscan to ancient Roman to Romanesque, Gothic, Renaissance, Baroque, Neoclassical, Art Nouveau, and modern architecture. What part of this aestheticism from your Italian culture did you bring with you to your work? For example, you mentioned in your TED Talk Giovanni Pernesi books.
Yes.
And they were around when you were growing up because your dad was into art and had all these books laying around. So what do you think this heritage, has it had an influence on you, this culture, in how you design your work?
Oh, absolutely. And I probably should add, my dad was a union electrician by training, but he was an artist. He was a painter. He was a sculptor. He was an inventor. I mean, he was constantly coming up with new ways to do things. He built us our own exercise equipment
out
of electrical tubing and pitching machines. Sleds that we got really hurt on, but were really fast and really fun.
So know you have to write a book about this stuff, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So
any ghostwriters out there, contact him because he's a busy man.
I do want to write this book, by
the
way.
Yes, you have to.
So anybody out there interested in helping me.
Yeah.
So the point is, he was very prolific and he was always doing something. And he drew a lot of influence from the visual world. And so we had a lot of, obviously, books and inevitably, like you, it makes its way into your imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Like the things that you see and so when you see these sort of drawings or these paintings, is sort of you know, like the Piranesi drawings, like you can imagine a whole world there, and you start to identify how, not just what it looks like as a two dimensional thing, but like what does it like feel like to mm-hmm. be there? How cool would it be to be? And I didn't realize this at the time. I mean, you know, we used to play with Legos too, and we're always making things, but you don't realize it. Like, all that stuff was very subconscious. It wasn't like, oh, I'm aware of, you know, my desire to be immersed in a Piranesi drawing. It's just like, you think back on it, you're like, oh, as a kid, I had this kind of emotional response to it that suggested that that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
And so that very much, and I didn't realize how much of a gift that was that we were given. Like, and that's why the arts are so damn important.
Yeah.
Because you really don't, you can't appreciate how much of the gift that has been given until much later.
Absolutely.
In your life. And so there were just some fundamental things that kind of trickle down to me. And like in a Caravaggio painting or a Vermeer, like the quality of light. And so like, and in the Piranesi drawings as well, like, wow, that light is amazing. And then you would see, like, if you were, like, waiting on a subway platform and there's an air vent, you would see this kind of mysterious gray light coming down. You're like, oh, that's, like, kind of like those
start
paintings.
Start to make those associations.
Cool. Yeah. And so then you start to think, oh, what is that? What would it be? So as you get older, a little more sophisticated, you go off to a university.
Yeah.
You know, you start being taught tools. You're like, oh, there actually are ways or methods by which I can get an effect like this, you know, whether it's through drawing or actually making something. And so slowly, like over time, it was like this kind of accumulation of like experiences that ended up becoming like your sort of the way you view the physical world around you. So time.
Yeah.
Time. We are so impatient. And I think this is probably an issue for architecture too. Like, everyone wants to fast forward to being like Frank Gehry or something like that. And I think there's a confusion between like playing games with form and really understanding the essential nature of space and form. And so, like, one of the things that I was definitely influenced by is the idea of like elementalism, like how like something is timeless, not in a cliche way. It's sort of like you figure out what is a universal experience for most people when it comes to natural lighting or materials or how you move through space, like how people move, or how they proceed through space.
Mm-hmm.
There's a time element to that that is very important in architecture. And weaving all that together, like you have to be like a maestro of an orchestra. Like, think about the lighting and, okay, when you walk in, this is kind of what you see and what you feel. And so you're like a cinematographer, right?
Yeah.
You're storyboarding this film, and this film happens to be end up being a building.
Yeah.
And so it's a very human-based approach to thinking about designing spaces and places for people.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and romantic, I might add, which definitely goes back to your roots.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. There's a sensual quality to it
because
we are human beings. Like, as much as our intellect sometimes tells us not, we are these, you know, sweaty, hairy beings that feel things, see things, hear things. And, you know, sometimes we lose track of our senses and our senses never lie, like, and especially our essence.
Yeah. So as a follow-up to that, and you alluded to this a little bit when you talked about how the arts are important. And we talked about this book earlier in our show, how important it is to cultivate that sense of history and appreciation for the arts and culture like your dad did with you. You also talked about this, how you were treated for how he treated you when you were arrested for trespassing in New York City in the subway tunnels because you enjoyed like traveling through them. And instead, he offered you the creative outlet. So what do you do with three girls, and you know they're of different generations, so that our listeners can get some contemporary ideas, like how can we impart some of those cultural appreciation for the arts and that exploration with our children?
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, yes has to be the answer to everything. It has to. And why, you know, asking questions. I think one thing I've encouraged my kids to do is whenever a situation arises that like raises a question on their behalves, I always try to encourage them to question like any previously held assumptions they have about it.
Mm.
Whether or not that ever sinks in, I mean, probably eventually it will.
Yeah.
But I ask them to be very curious and inquisitive about life. And I think curiosity fundamentally and creativity go hand in hand. I mean, that's where the arts are important.
Right.
So obviously in our house, we've got pieces that like I've made, they've got paintings that my dad made. You know, we have paintings from other people we know. We have things we've bought. You know, we have books.
Mm-hmm.
And so we model, like that stuff is part of our life.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see it as, like, we don't have decorative things. We have things that are meaningful.
Nice.
Because that's where I think people lose a sense of connection to art, is that they see it as some other thing that happens. But as I grew up with it, it was part of what you did. It was it was like woven into life.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not just like visuals, it's like food.
Yeah.
And all that. So, you know, I try to get them to think be have a critical eye and develop like a good like visual literacy. And so they'll always ask me, "Hey, Dad, you know, what do you think of that? And why? Like, why? So why is that good or why is that bad? And or, you know, why is that successful and the other one's not?" And they've started as they've gotten older asking those questions. So it means that they were kind of paying attention.
Okay.
Because I would, you know, I would go and I would say, "Oh, that thing is." You know, I had this whole game I would play with them, well, not necessarily with them, but like we would look at weird conditions and walking around the neighborhood. So like there were these balconies that were not really balconies. They were just like railings stuck on a wall. We called them falconies, like fake balconies. And so like I would always point things like that out. But I don't know that they were paying attention to that, but maybe they were.
And, I think maybe they were.
They're kind of breaking it down now.
Somewhere.
And they point things out and say, "That's kind of odd. Yeah. Why would you do that?" And I'm like, "I don't know. Why would you do that?"
That's good. And what I really like about what you were saying is bringing it into your home, because traditionally you'll ask someone that and they'll say, "Oh, take them to the museums, take them to see a concert." But having that as part of your everyday surroundings and not just buying something from Pier One or whatever, like going and like bringing art into your home from a local artist, it doesn't have to be. It could be something you made or your parents made is a really great way to have that around you. That's a great answer.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be beautiful. It's just there has to be a story.
Yeah.
I mean, every object has a story.
Right.
And so that this a story sometimes is more beautiful than the thing.
Right. Going to connect you with your culture. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you say about yourself, and I'm a lucky guy that lives a charmed life and loves to be surrounded by art, design, music, travel, good food, and good people. And at the time when you wrote this, I also have two of the most amazing children. Well, today you have three. And you're now in a new relationship, new marriage with another child. And when we talk about culture, we talked about how it can mean pretty much anything to any group that has commonality. So my question is, what is the difference in the culture of, let's say, a nuclear family versus a blended step family? And what can you offer those who are trying to navigate this cultural space from the point of view of someone who's doing that right?
Well, thank you for saying that I'm doing it right.
Yeah, because I see many pictures of your family together in the blended situation, and it's wonderful.
So a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's priority. Like, so if the children are the priority, and like you say, everything else is stuff that adults have to just work out.
Yeah.
That's a huge part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it helps, like negotiation is a big part of it, and kind of compromise is a huge one. I mean, I think that respect over years of having relationships, I mean, it always depends on the relationship, but anybody that's been in a relationship long enough, there's always going to be some respect there that it was always there before and it'll continue to be there. And I think the individual that's kind of at the center of the whole situation needs to model the best behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about the behavior you model, and the things that you choose to say or choose not to say are very important.
Mm-hmm.
So that the respect, you know, understanding, negotiation, and compromise. I mean, it does help that the mother of my two older children and Sarah, you know, Lori and Sarah, they get along very well.
That's wonderful.
I wonder sometimes if they get along with each other better than get along with either of them. But it helps to have them on the same page.
It
but
does.
I think it takes a while to get on that page. And obviously, you know, when you're in a relationship where there's someone new there, you know, a new mom comes along.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, any human being is going to feel territorial about that.
Yeah.
But when that emotion hits you,
yeah.
it's like, you know, asking yourself, well, what would be threatening about this to me? Like, most people don't think about the upside. Like, you know, here's a potentially nice person that
yeah.
can. Now, I'm unlucky. I'm in a situation where there are two very nice people who get along, but it's not always the case. But then that puts the onus on the person who's in the middle to try to model the behavior as best as possible.
Who's that, you?
Yeah, I mean, that would
okay.
yeah. So,
okay.
So you kind of
so model.
End up, yeah, model and kind of negotiate and try to hold it together.
Yeah. Okay, so you've redesigned most of the cultural institutions of our city, and one can say you are personally woven into the fabric of our culture. What is next for Michael Buongiorno aside from a bronze sculpture that we will be erecting of you someday to honor all the cultural transformations you've given us over the years?
Well, I'm not sure I want that. So very excited about, we worked on the master plan for the Ohio History Connections new collections facility. And as envisioned in the master plan, it's working with Ohio History Connection, who they had a clear vision of what they wanted to do differently.
They needed an update too.
Yes. Yes. And so basically think about it as a inverted storage facility for objects that the state holds in trust. And they're all our wonderful objects from around the state of Ohio. And remember I said earlier that the idea of the object has, you know, tells a story.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is to give these objects that have been in a storage facility in the dark somewhere
give people access to it and to invert that experience from it being an enclosed thing to it being kind of. So there are a lot of different ways you can do that. You can do it through technology. You can do it actually physically. You can do it through a docent. So we explored a lot of different ways to do it. And so we're at a stage now where we're competing for the project to move forward as an actual project. And so I'm very excited about that.
Awesome.
There are two other things that I've signed a non-disclosure for, so I cannot say.
Don't.
But they're very cool, and I'm very excited about them, and they could be pretty cool game changers for Columbus.
Awesome.
If they move forward.
Okay, maybe I can get you to tell me about it off the record.
Yes, yes.
And what's your website for people to go and kind of check you out?
It's www.designgroup.us.com.
Okay. And you have another office in Pittsburgh? Or
Yes, we have a Pittsburgh office. Yep. Our home base is here. We're about 62 people.
Very nice.
And we may be thinking about another city.
Okay. Last question. Your dad said this to you, and I get this from one of the quotes you put on your social pages.
Oh, no. I know which one you're going to say.
My son, if I give you one piece of advice, is this. Never be anyone's, underling. What's another cultural nugget you received from your dad that you would like to share today with our listening audience?
Okay, cultural nugget, I'm not so sure, but I will say I could tell you why I became an architect.
Okay, perfect.
That has something to do with him. So, as I mentioned earlier, I'm beating a dead horse, but we didn't have much when we were growing up. We had a neighbor who worked on Wall Street, a nice house, a nice car, nice clothes. So when I was younger, I told my dad, like, I want to be a stockbroker, and he said, no. You know, you chase the money, you're never happy. You not chase the money, you're never happy. I'm like, all right, well, that's convenient. Like, we don't have anything, so that's a great narrative for you.
Yeah.
So as the years went on, like, I discovered that I can draw and I can sculpt, like, just like my dad. You know, I didn't realize I had this talent, and you know, and here it is. And so then I told him I want to, Dad, I know what I want to. Too. This was like when I was a teenager. I said, I want to be an artist. I want to be a sculptor. He's like, no. You'll starve. You'll never have any money. You don't want to be an artist. He said, why don't you be an architect? You make a little art and you make a little money.
Aww.
Everybody's happy. So
that's how you did it.
So it's like his practical side and his his sort of adventurous side came together in that moment.
Well, it looked like it worked out for you.
It did.
Good. Well, thank you, Ms. Bongiorno. We look forward to all of your next transformations, and we really appreciate your cultural renovations of our city.
I appreciate you having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks. Now, a word from our person on the street. So, Jim, what are your thoughts on culture?
Well, I can really only look at myself. I've been a photographer for 40 years, photographing weddings all over the world. I still look back, and my favorite wedding was in Paris. I was able to spend about 2 weeks there, really just walking everywhere. The sights, the people, the buildings, everything was just so beautiful. Another great place I shot a wedding was in Hawaii. I was able to stay there for about 7 to 10 days. Just really enjoyed, went to places on a Jeep that... The places that we went to, it looked like you were on the moon. Mm. It's such a diverse geography on the islands. So I really enjoyed that. Enjoyed the people. Honolulu really surprised me, the nightlife. Mm. I mean, it was 2 o'clock in the morning and it was like New York City.
Yeah, sure.
So
the culture inspired your photography?
Oh, it absolutely did.
Well, thank you for sharing your thoughts on culture.
Thank you very much.
And that's our show for today, folks. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Rhea Greif, and you've been listening to U Inc. on 90.5 WCBE.